Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is the responsive day for the 4th of Kislev. Welcome, and thank you for listening. Today we're going to study a responsive of Rav Bezalel Stern in Shut Bezalel HaChokhmah. He was a somewhat distant relative of mine, so I often have a weak spot for trying to find opportunities to listen to and learn from him. I think I met him, actually, many years ago as well, soon before he passed away. But the real reason to learn this tshuva is because it teaches us many interesting things about the nature of what's identification with Judaism and what we do or don't do with those who choose to identify out. So in Bezalel HaChokhmah, first volume, response number 51, he is responding to his brother-in-law, Ma'alat Kvod Ahuvi Gisi, my beloved brother-in-law, Moshe Zisha Kinstlicher. So that's the man's name. He was one of the leaders of the community in the city of Banska Bystrica, which is the sixth most populous, I find out from Wikipedia, the sixth most populous city or municipality in Slovakia, I guess, whatever that's worth. This man is resting the question, actually, not on the 4th of Kislev, which is our date for today, but actually on the first day. So it's interesting, he writes, Rav Bezalel Stern writes, the first day of the week of Parshat Vayetze in Tafresh Tzadi Zayin, which was 1936, but was in fact the first of Kislev. Now, I found that interesting because it means that to Rav Bezalel Stern was more noteworthy that it was Parshas Vayetze than it was Rosh Chodesh Kislev. So how did he get to be reading it on the 4th of Kislev? Because he puts in a note before he publishes this tshuva that while he wrote it to his brother-in-law at the time, that he then puts in parentheses, Neherag al Kiddush Hashem, this man, this Moshe Kinstlicher, was killed by the Nazis, obviously. He was killed in this city, Be'ir Hanal, with his whole family on the 4th of Kislev of Tavshin Dalet of 1943. So the poor man and his family were killed and destroyed. It happens to be that Wikipedia tells us that in August, the following August, Banska Bystrica became a central place of anti-Nazi resistance. They had a Slovak national uprising. They were part of it. They got destroyed and they lost. But it seems like this was a place that did its best to try to resist the Nazis, Yimach Shema. In any case, I thought it was, for all of those reasons, worth our while to learn what this man had asked Rav Bezalel Stern about. So the question was in the following. This is pre-war. Right? This is 1936. So it also gives us a little bit of an insight or an eye on Jewish communities before World War II. So in Banska Bystrica, they had a man in their community who, the community for whatever reason, and this is not made clear in the tshuva, at the end, Rav Bezalel Stern adds a thing about maybe being careful about how we assess taxes of people. But there was a certain man in a certain community who the community assessed him a large tax. So this is a reminder that, very different from our times, there was a time for hundreds of years or thousands of years, where Jewish communities had the right to really assess people, meaning you wouldn't just say, well, here's our membership number, please give membership, and here's, you know, what we hope people will donate, and they'll donate out of their goodwill, and please donate. But they would say, this is what we need to run the community, and based on our understanding of your finances, here's what you owe, and then they'd be expected to pay that. Now, they'd have the right to appeal, I mean, to talk to the community, to say, well, you think that I'm so wealthy in this way, but I'm not. There was all sorts of possibilities for doing it, but fundamentally, the community got to decide how much you owed, and that was the way that your contribution was determined. And the local government supported the community in this, meaning that somebody was identified with a particular community was under the rule of that community. This was a system in Europe for a long time. It was one of the reasons why famously, or Samson Raphael Hirsch eventually decided to break away from the community because it was a joint community with the Reform, and he broke away as soon as the German government allowed it to happen. So that whole thing, that was a European system where communities were official legal entities, and members of the community had official legal responsibilities to their communities. The communities had the ability to force, to coerce them to do various things. So this man didn't like the amount that he was assessed. And by this time, by 1936, he had the ability, this is already a long-standing ability, he had the ability, and he did, he went to the local civil court, and he declared himself ben belidat. He declared himself free of religion, right? Somebody who does not belong to any religion. He signed to that effect in the courts there, and by doing that, and this is, you know, decades earlier, this is what had allowed Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch and his community to separate from the community, because by this point, by that point really, the decision had been made that people could decide that they were not part of the recognized community. They wouldn't, doing so, lose certain rights. So in Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch, for example, the question was, you'd have to set up your own cemetery because the organized community ruled or, you know, handled the old cemetery, the real cemetery, the traditional cemetery, meaning not traditional like the Orthodox, or not traditional like the one that everybody used to be buried in. So if you don't belong to that community anymore, you're going to have to take care of those things on your own. But there was the option to opt out of not of being a member of that community. So by doing so, the government immediately agreed that this man doesn't have to pay his communal taxes because he's not part of that community. He is free of all religion. He is not somebody who is religious. That's what the man did. Eventually, for whatever reason, for reasons that are not made clear in the question, he decided he wanted back in. He realized that his mistake, or he just realized it wasn't a good idea. He wants to return to the community, and he wants to find a compromise about the compromise on the amount of the taxes of the money that he has to donate, and he wants back in. So the Miss Moshe Kinschlicher, the brother-in-law of Rizal Stern, isn't sure, not that he doesn't want to do it, but he isn't sure if they're allowed to accept him back in without him doing a tefillah, going to mikvah, and publicly declaring his readiness for a beit din, his readiness to be fully observant. Because it happens to be, if you look up in Shulchan Aruch in Yerideya, at the end of chapter Reish Samachet of 268, there's a Ramah there that says that if a Jew has abandoned observance and then repents, so that's a Yisrael Mumar, Shasat Shuva, a Jew who abandoned observance, then this becomes complicated because let's say the person was born not knowing anything about observance. There it's not so clear that we would require them to do this. But let's say you had somebody who was observant for a while and then they abandoned observance and then they decided to come back and be observant again. So, again, today, I'm not sure that we would apply this halacha just because people don't generally become observant that way, and they would be perhaps offended if we were suggesting they go through this. But the Ramah's idea was that that person should go to mikvah midirabbanan. It's a rabbinic immersion because it's symbolic of them becoming Jewish again, right? With a non-Jew who converts, they have to go to mikvah. They have to immerse in a mikvah, and they have to immerse in a mikvah because they're returning to, they're becoming Jewish. So the Ramah is saying that there was a tradition that you would do the same thing for a Jew who had abandoned the religion, because in abandoning the religion, while halakhically his status might still be a Jew, and it might still be that Hashem punishes him or her as a regular Jew, nonetheless, they're having lived for a while as if they weren't Jewish at all. So that became became this idea that they should go to mikvah on the way back in, and they should be kabbal divrei chaverut. I mean, they should declare their intent and their interest in observing mitzvot at the highest, at the best possible standard. So that's a Ramah. That's true for a Yisrael Mumar, for a Yisrael who has abandoned the religion. But what about this guy? So this guy has publicly declared that he's not Jewish, O Dilma, but in fact it turns out that he never did go to another religion. And maybe the question is, by virtue of the fact that he never actually, in practice, abandoned membership in the Jewish community, he declared it for tax purposes, right? That's all he did. He declared it for tax purposes, but he didn't really do anything. We're going to find out, and Rav Moshe Stern makes it clear, Rav Bezalel Stern makes it clear in the Tshuva, that not only didn't he abandon Judaism in the sense of declaring another religion, he in fact stayed fully observant. And it's not like he didn't put on tefillin every day and go to shul on Shabbos. He just declared himself not a member of the community. So it was purely, in his mind, a financial issue. The question was, given though that he declared himself not Jewish in public courts, does that require, therefore, a mikvah immersion on his return to being a member of the community? In asking the question, Moshe Kinschlicher had turned to his brother-in-law and he had shown him a tshuva in Melami Lahoel. Remember, Melami Lahoel is a tshuva by Rav David Tzvi Hoffman. My Barry Lyon tells me that Rav David Tzvi Hoffman was born actually in Hungary, and Rav Bezalel Stern lived in Hungary. So then this question is going on in Hungary. Because I think at some point Banka Bystrica was actually part of the Kingdom of Hungary. Okay, so there's a lot of Hungarians here, although Rav David Tzvi Hoffman moved to Germany and became better known for his involvement with German Jewish communities. This, Moshe Kinschlicher had found the Tshuva in Melami Lahoel in the fourth volume, Simon Pei Dalet, who also raised this question. And Rav David Tzvi Hoffman had said, yep, I think he has to go to mikveh again. And now he's writing to his brother-in-law to find out whether that's true, whether we should follow this Melamed Lehoel. So in answering the question, now he's starting the answer, Saul Stern's starting the answer, he says, I've never seen this Melamed Lehoel before, and I never heard of it until you brought it to me. And then he says, and I don't know who wrote it. So I was just struck by the fact that, you know, Saul Stern is a tremendous Talmid Chacham, and he knows a lot, he's learned a lot, and he's living in Hungary, which isn't that far from Germany, and Rav Zalman was in fact born in Hungary, and Rav Zalman was, I think, a relatively well-known Torah authority, and yet Rav Saul Stern has no idea who he is. So that's an interesting thing. So then he says, when it comes to the question itself, he says, I don't think, and I also don't think that I follow his logic, Malamelo's logic. I think I disagree with him, basically. And so he says, let's talk about the issue. Because if you go to a civil court and you sign that you're not Jewish, so he says, first of all, he's violated a terrible prohibition, right? This is he's done something wrong. And there's a Chil Hashem, right? There's a desecration of God's name that somebody for money purposes is willing to declare himself not a member of the Jewish religion. So that's a problematic thing. And Hashem will punish that person. The Mishnah, he makes a reference here. The Mishnah Avot says somebody who violates, commits a Chil Hashem even in private, they will be Nifra'in Mimenu Begaloi. That there will be some public way that this person will bear the punishment for what they've done. So he's not going to minimize in any way what the man has done. But this is a man who said this in the Erchaot, in their civil courts there, but he continued keeping the mitzvos as you know, punctiliously as anybody else. And that's going to affect his decision about whether he has to go to mikvah. So he's done a terrible thing. And it's clear in Yoredeya that you're not allowed to do it, because in the Shulchan Aruch, in 157.2 of Yoredeya, rules that a person is not allowed to say, I'm an Akob, I am a non-Jew, I am a Christian, I am whatever it is. And he's not even allowed to do that to avoid being killed. So, but what he is allowed to do, and this came up, sadly, after this Jew, this came up in World War II sometimes, with what extent people were allowed to declare themselves non-Jewish. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if you're trying to hope that people won't notice that you're Jewish, you change your clothing, and then they draw their own conclusions, that's allowed. But to literally say the words, I'm not Jewish, or I belong to another religion, or I this, or so the Shulchan Aruch seems to postulate that that's not allowed. Rav Saul Stern says, even the idea of changing clothing to look like a non-Jew is in Makom Sakana. That's in a place where it's dangerous to be thought of as a Jew, because they might kill you. Part of the reason why you can't say it out loud that you're not Jewish is because it's a time if they're hunting down Jews, and it's a terrible thing, but that becomes a Shara Shema, it becomes like a Yaharik Val Yavar, it becomes like you're not allowed to save your life by doing things that are against the Torah, such as denying one's Judaism. I will note that the Ramah there says, you can't say you're a non-Jew or an idolater, but you can say something which sounds ambiguous and they'll take the wrong meaning of it. And you can also mislead them. So, you know, if they think you're a non-Jew, then you're allowed to just allow them to continue thinking it. So there are all sorts of issues that come up here. That is not our question. I'm just pointing out that that's not as cut and dry as it might sound, but that's the fundamental halacha. You're not allowed to declare yourself a non-Jew. So this guy is violating that. And all of that where we say you're not allowed to, or maybe you're allowed to wear different clothing, or you're allowed to trick them, or you're allowed to say something ambiguous, that's all in a place where there's danger. But this guy's just doing it for the financial value of it, so therefore it's clearly off. And if you can't do it for money purposes, obviously you can't do it to avoid paying communal taxes, which after all are supporting the community, right? It's one thing to say you can't do it for money, but all the more so that you can't do it for where the money is going for a cause that is clearly one that we would support, meaning the Jewish community. Now, in our times today, people would say, oh, well, maybe the community is misusing the funds, maybe they charge too much. So that we don't get into. But the fundamental idea, and I wonder if people today might lose some sight of that as well. The fundamental idea is that communal needs are communal needs, and therefore you should be supporting your community to the right amount. And I wonder today if everybody commutes them to the supports their Jewish communities to the amount that they think they can really do because they value it. I think a lot of times today maybe people don't realize that. In any case, sticking with our tshuva rather than allowing me to editorialize, anybody who wants editorials from me can get them anytime they want. You can email me, grothst@gmail.com. Anyway, getting back to the tshuva. Now, in the tshuva, he points out, yes, that in the Shulchan Aruch, it talks about declaring oneself an akum, which here pretty much seems to mean a member of another religion, not getting into the delicate questions of which religions count as idolatry and which ones don't. But just the idea of declaring one's allegiance to another religion is clearly prohibited. But here, the man didn't do that. So Rav Zal Stern says, nonetheless, it's clear to him that that would be true as well. It would be no distinction if he says, clearly, I'm an Akum, I'm a non-Jew, or he just says, I'm not Jewish. Right? Now, at times, there are a lot of people who will say, I'm not any religion. So maybe that's not what the Shulchan Aruch meant. Maybe that is allowed. Maybe that's not the same violation of the thing. So Rav Zal Stern says, it's clear to him that that's not true. For one thing, the Rosh, who is the source for the halacha that the Shulchan Aruch is writing, says, after he proving that it's prohibited to say I can be an akum, he writes, "Derav Elazar ben Parta de kafar shelo shana v'shelo nismak." So there's a case of Elazar ben Parta in the Gemara who finds a way to mislead people into thinking he's not Jewish, and he says, I never learned any Torah, and I was never given smicha. So the Rosh says, that's not a denial of being Jewish, because there are lots of Jews who never learned and never got smicha. So, in other words, Elazar ben Parta in that situation found a way to imply that he wasn't Jewish without actually saying he wasn't Jewish. That's what we said, talked about before, as being in the Ramah, saying that's a possibility. But it's also true that it would seem to imply that if all Jews had done that, meaning let's say the man said, I never got a brit milah, I never got circumcised, and in their time, literally every Jew was circumcised, so, and he had not been circumcised for some reason that a tiny minority of Jews were not circumcised. So saying that, though, would seem to be that the Rosh would say that that's not allowed, right? He says the Rosh's explanation for why it was okay for Elazar ben Parta to say what he said was that because that's not denying one's Judaism, because there are lots of Jews. Now, it might be that the non-Jews don't realize that and they get the wrong message, but to say straight up, I'm not a Jew, it seems to the Rebbe Stern that it's clearly and obviously the same kind of a prohibition, and the prohibition is that one is sort of declaring one's lack of allegiance to Hashem, and what is not, and no Jew is allowed to do that. That being true, to say in court, I have no share of the Jewish people, which Rebbe Zal Stern points out is the same as saying, God forbid, I have no share in the God of Israel. So to say I have no share in the God of Israel, God forbid, Rebbe Zal Stern is saying that's the prohibition. And that's true even if it doesn't mean anything. Even if the person's lying, even if that person is going to daven mincha that afternoon, maariv that night, wear tefillin, keep Shabbos, and all the things. It really means all those things. Nonetheless, he's violated this great, terrible prohibition. Besides the fact that it's terrible, and what does it say about a person? He says, davar mechoar me'od. It's really particularly ugly. It's really a shameful thing that for monetary value, just because the person doesn't want to pay the communal taxes he thinks he's required to pay, that clearly is a chil Hashem, that that's the level to which Jews would sink. And Chazal have already said, she'in makifin b'chilul Hashem, that in heaven they don't... I'm sorry, I'm just pausing. It's hard for me to say. They don't wait when it comes to Chilul Hashem. They punish people for Chilul Hashem right away or very soon, and they do it in public. And it's a reason to be very careful to avoid Chilul Hashem. And this person has not. So with all that, meaning this researcher is not giving this man a free pass in any way whatsoever, and nonetheless, he doesn't think. It seems clear to him that the whole idea that you had in the Ramah of going to mikveh, when you come back, he doesn't think it applies here. Because, and it's not, he says it's not because, the Ramah used the word mumar. And you might have said, but to be a mumar, you have to abandon observance. Maybe this is a technical reason. He says, no, even if by mumar, he means kafar bedat yudit, he denied his Jewishness, Tarech Tefillah, he needs to go to mikvah. So right, mumar, it doesn't have to mean I went to another religion. It can mean I just denied my Jewishness, even if it's included there. And the Rav Zal Stern thinks that's true. In other words, leaving this man aside, let's suppose, sadly, you had a Jew who just simply abandoned observance and ended up saying, I'm not Jewish, and meant it, and acted not Jewish, and got all those terrible things, never joined another religion, never became a Muslim, or a Buddhist, or a Hindu, or whatever it is, never did any of those things, and then wants to come back to religion there, Rav Zal Stern, even though it's not clear in the Ramah, says he has to be a mumar, which has this certain technical standards to it. Nonetheless, Saul Sternstein to Ramah implies that he would have had needed a tefillah, an immersion in mikvah, upon that person's returning to observance. But, oh, and he says it because there is no distinction in Allah, as far as he knows, between somebody who abandons observance and somebody who joins another religion. It's an interesting comment. Remember, this is from 1936, so it's not commenting on anything in our times at all. But it's an interesting comment because I think that if you ask many, many Jews today about which is worse, somebody who leaves observance, sadly, you have many younger Jews today, let's say, years ago I had a guy tell me that he thinks that some huge percentage of Jews who go to college end up at least temporarily abandoning the observance, and they said, but it's not so terrible because they come back when they get married. So I was horrified by the idea that we could be sanguine about people spending many of their formative years lacking in, having abandoned and given up on observance, even if they're going to come back later. Rabbi Stern, not knowing our situation, is going to say, that's the same thing, right? That's the same thing if the person's really denied their Jewishness. So that most of these college kids probably don't go that far. So maybe that's not the greatest example. Let's say, God forbid, somebody went along and said, yeah, I'm not observant anymore. I don't really care about Judaism. I don't believe in the Jewish religion anymore. So that's no different, Rasul Stern says, in his mind, than somebody actually goes ahead and converts to another religion. They're both the same thing. So if you know somebody who says, I don't keep Judaism, I don't believe in Judaism, I'm not a Jew, I don't believe in the religious part of Judaism anymore, they don't have to abandon their Jewish identity, but they don't believe in Judaism anymore, Rasul Stern is saying he doesn't see a distinction between that and actually joining another religion. And an example of that, he says, is, this is a halakha question that doesn't come up so often, but there is a halakha that if, let's suppose, sadly, a man and a woman get married, and the man passed away without children, the halakha of the Torah was that woman was supposed to have a yibum marriage, which is what's called in English a leveret marriage, with one of her brothers-in-law. Let's say there's only one brother-in-law. Let's suppose that one brother-in-law has abandoned the religion, and he is a mumar. So the halakha is, she doesn't have to worry about it. In certain situations, she doesn't have to get a chalitza for him if he was a mumar at the time they got married, for various reasons. Not our issue right now, so we don't have to get into it, but basically, it's because it seems like it's an implicit condition. She never meant to get married if it was going to be true that she was going to have to worry about getting a chalitza from this brother who's already abandoned the religion. So in this Tshuva in the Chasam Sofer notes that a Mordechai that seems to say that that's only true. So the Mordechai is living in the 1200s. Back then, you know, being a mumar generally meant going to another religion. So the Mordechai seems to say that the situation where we say that a mumar is not zokek liyibum, does not cause an obligation of yibum at all, such that she would need a chalitza, only applies to where the mumar, the brother, has actually joined a different religion, joined a different nation, and therefore has completely removed himself from Judaism. But the Chasam Sofer, who's an Acharon, and Mordechai is a Rishon, the Chasam Sofer, and in a tshuva, says he thinks that there are plenty of reasons to say that we don't distinguish, that that's only true for yibum, but for lots of other reasons, all mumarim are the same, and abandoning the Jewish religion is no different than joining another actual religion, and so that's the way Rasul Stern thinks it as well. Coming back to our case, though, however, it's still not going to be relevant. Why? Because the Ramah's requirement of immersion in a mikvah was only when he has demonstrated with his actions that he really does deny central faith principles. And he really has abandoned Judaism in a meaningful way and the God of Judaism in a meaningful way. That until now he kept mitzvos, and now he's not keeping mitzvos. But if he goes to the civil court and he says, you know, he doesn't have a religion, and he only does it to avoid taxes, as we all know that that's true, and then he continues keeping mitzvos, it's a terrible thing. He's violated the Torah. He might have committed a Chilul Hashem. He might pay in heaven, and heaven might extract punishment from him for having done so. But he hasn't really abandoned the religion, right? Because there's no hamarah here. There's no leaving of the religion, and therefore he thinks there's no need for going to the mikvah. And that answers the Ramban Lahore of Zosu Hoffman had thought you had to go to the mikvah, and he had given it a proof from a case from another tshuva. It was a tshuva from an enemy, Rav Moshe Gaon, that was quoted in the Radvaz. And Rav Moshe Gaon was asked about a certain place where all the Jews, it was a place of minim. Okay, it was a piece of people who have abandoned their religion, their Jewishness. They were all the Jewish community. They all laughed at actual Jews, and they didn't keep Jewish ways, and they didn't keep any mitzvos, and they were putzin ba'arayos, they didn't didn't care who they had relations with, or they didn't follow the strictures of Judaism, just revelation. That meant that you might have a lot of mamzerim there, a lot of halachically illegitimate children there. They wouldn't write a get when they got divorced, they wouldn't write a ketuvah when they got married, and now some of them want to come and become and return to Judaism. So there's a whole discussion there. So Moshe Gaon, I think, says that they have to, even though they never joined another religion, they do have to go to mikvah. And there's a whole set of problems. So the Lamed Olam, we often use that as proof that a Yisrael Mumar, that a Jew who has left the religion, even though he hasn't gone to another religion, has to go to mikvah. I'm sorry, so Moshe Gaon wasn't clear about those. You didn't go to another religion, and therefore it's a suffix, and therefore he says you might as well go. But Rav Bezalel Shern says that's all fine and good for the case of Moshe Gaon, because that was where they weren't keeping Judaism. That's the case of they've left the religion but not going to another religion. That we've discussed before, and Rav Moshe Gaon isn't sure about it. Rav Bezalel Shern has said he thinks, yeah, they probably would have to go to mikvah. But in our case, and apparently in the case of the Malamed Lohel as well, there was nothing like that, right? In the case of Moshe Gaon, quoted in the Radvaz, they would laugh at the Torah and they would violate the Torah. And so there they clearly did abandon it. But here we don't have any abandoning going on, and therefore the man doesn't have to go to mikvah. But he adds, it's also true and important that the leaders of the community be very careful not to act in ways that would lead to this happening again, meaning they have to be careful when they assess people, that they assess them in a way that's not going to lead them to do such a terrible thing. So it's hard to know, because none of us know, and I'm not sure if Bezalel Shern knew, who was in the right or wrong when it came to the assessing of this man. It could be the community, right? I certainly think there are people out there who, if the community assessed what was a reasonable share for this man, a reasonable share, A, of his income, and B, of the communal needs to get from him, and he just decided, well, I'm not having any of this. I'd rather just go to the local court. Doesn't affect my Judaism, right? That's what he thinks in his head. Doesn't affect my actual Judaism, doesn't affect my relationship with Hashem. I'm just telling them that I'm declaring legally not to be a member of any religion. So that's what he's thinking. We're all certain things, so the communal leaders need to keep that in mind as they assess people. It can get very, very complicated. A couple of years ago, there was some very wealthy man, I forget who, and I don't want to say a name because I really forget who, but somebody was on a TV show and said, you know, I paid $600 million last year in taxes. And so the hosts of the show, I think the show was Morning Joe, but the host of the show, I saw the clip somewhere, said, well, doesn't it matter how much you made last year? And he said, $600 million is a lot of money. So it is a lot of money, but if he made $6 billion that year, it's 10%, whereas much of America, you know, much of the country is paying at least 20% in taxes, if not more than that. So that perspective is always a big question. It could be that the community erred here, and they charged him more than they should have, but it could be also that he was just an extremely wealthy man. So years ago, I had a relative, a close relative, who was the president of his local shul, and I remember him telling me, I was a college student, I think, telling me that basically five members of a community with, you know, 100, 200, 300 families in it, basically five members of the community keep the community going. That's all voluntarily by our times, but it's imaginable to me that the community might have recognized that this is a man who's in the top 10 rank of the community in terms of income and income and wealth and all those things. They assigned him an amount of money to pay that was appropriate to what he was paying, and he just went out of his mind and said, I don't want it. Or it could be that they assigned him more than he was really worth, and they didn't give him a good way to try to arbitrate it or discuss it or anything like that. So these are complicated issues that Rav Bezalel Shern is pointing out to this man as well. You have to be very careful in how you assess people, because you don't want them to do anything like this. So conclusions of his conclusion that he puts at the end of the tshuva, conclusion number one, even in a place of danger to one's life, you're not allowed to say out loud, I'm not Jewish. Just like you're not allowed to say, I am a Buddhist, or I am a Muslim, or I am a Hindu, you're not allowed to do that. If somebody denies their religion, even if they didn't go to another religion, they'll need a tefillah in the mikvah when they return. That's halacha that often isn't applied today, but that's halacha Shulchan Aruch, the Bezalel Shern is saying, is still true. And third, if somebody goes to a civil court and says he denies the Jewish religion, and he does it just for purely financial reasons, and it doesn't reflect itself in his observance at all, that person does not need a tefillah, even though he's done a terrible crime, and even though he may have done a chilul Hashem, and he may pay for, and Hashem may punish him for it severely, that does not qualify to require a tefillah. So some of the issues that come up when somebody declares in civil court that they're not Jewish, God forbid. And that is a response of the day for the 4th of Kislev, a chance to remember a time gone by, a place called Banka Bystrica, which had a Jewish community in which at least one man thought the community taxed him too heavily and made a choice that we would all hope we don't make. Have a great day.